And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls, we'll get to your tweets in a little bit. But the 2017 NFL Draft is complete. We don't have to speculate anymore. We actually have a draft class that we could break down. So we will be discussing the ins and outs of the Giants' six picks. They did not have a seventh-round selection because they packaged their sixth and their seventh-round pick to Tennessee to move up so that they could select the offensive lineman out of Pittsburgh, Adam Biznavati. So we will get into that as well as the rest of the draft class. But let's go with at least first impressions here, Paul. And they basically addressed a variety of different positions within this draft class.
Yes.
In terms of running back, a quarterback, two defensive linemen, an offensive lineman, as I mentioned, and the tight end in the first round. The one that jumps out to me, and I think it's an opportunity aside from the first round pick that could step in and make an immediate impact, is their second round selection and Dalvin Tomlinson. And that actually plays right into the track record that I have brought up numerous times. When Linval Joseph left, what did they do? In the second round, they got Jonathan Hankins to replace Linval Joseph, who was also a second round pick that replaced Barry Cofield. And now you're seeing that this trend is continuing, where all of a sudden another second round pick from a powerhouse school has an opportunity to step in and compete with Jay Bromley and Robert Thomas to step in and play next to Damon Harrison immediately.
Yeah, I mean, they went to a big program in Alabama, yeah, first of all, with a team that had so many stars on defense, it was easy to lose Tomlinson in the shuffle. You know, we had talked the other day when he was on the program, and folks, thanks again for watching and listening and participating in our three draft shows here, because we had a marathon worth of draft coverage, and it was really a lot of fun to bring it to you. And when Tomlinson came on with John and I on Friday, I had said to him, I'm going to read something for you. And I said, Dalvin, there's a writer who wrote a big feature story on you, and he says, most of the teammates on the Alabama squad say you are the most underrated player on the team. What? How does that make you feel, and why would they say that? And, of course, very humble, very, very humble. Just talked about what a great coach Nick Saban was and how many terrific players he had on the team, and that, you know, obviously it was easy to be overlooked when they had so many other headline-grabbing players who would make big plays, whether it be sacks, interceptions, a ton of tackles. He's just a guy who's in the interior of the defensive line doing the dirty work. Those guys usually don't get the lights and the headlines and the fireworks.
Of course, yeah.
So really enjoyed talking to him, though, and he is very much like Jonathan Hankins' shadow, per se. And so that's really cool, and you know, couldn't be happier about that.
Well, obviously, he stands out clearly because of his ability to stop the run, as well as perhaps to have some potential in terms of the pass rush. I think that's maybe somewhat of an overlooked facet of his game, which was the case with Linval Joseph and Jonathan Hankins. He only had five sacks over the course of his career, but keep in mind, Tomlinson was not a main starter until
right,
his final year when he had 15 starts. Prior to that, he was a rotational backup, and he also had dealt with some knee injuries early in his career. So Tomlinson, to me, is one of the most intriguing ones out of this class. Evan Engram, I know, obviously, has received a lot of discussion considering he was the first-round pick, and you have been connecting the dots, perhaps, to see how he may fit within the scheme.
Yeah, here's the thing with Evan Engram, and so many people are comparing him to Jordan Reed of the Washington Redskins. That's not what this is about, folks. After going through some extensive thinking about this and researching it and then talking to some people, what he really is Jermichael Finley for the Giants. If you'll recall, Coach McAdoo was the tight ends coach,
yeah,
for the Packers, and he was the guy who groomed Jermichael Finley, who came in as a tight end but was really more of a wide receiver for the Packers and became even more of a stand-up move receiver tight end over the course of time and became a very dominant player for them. Yes, he helped break the shell in terms of the cover two. Yes, he helped open up the middle of the field and even the perimeter because he would draw attention. But here's the thing that's very interesting about it. The Giants' offense, as it's currently constructed, very much resembles, if you look at the personnel, the 2011 Green Bay Packers, which was McAdoo's last year as the tight ends coach in Green Bay. And by the way, Jermichael Finley also happens to be one of his favorite players of all time. So it should not surprise us that Engram is going to receive, and again, I'm using this in quotes because I'm sure it's not word for word, letter for letter, but he's going to be the JerMichael Finley of the Giants. He's going to take over that role. Now, why do I say this? Look at the 2011 Green Bay Packers and look at the skill positions. They are remarkably similar in all the spots to the Giants. They're going to run that team. They're going to run that team's playbook is what's going to happen. Because on that team, they had Ryan Grant and James Starks backfield by committee. Both of them ran for over 500 yards, but they did not have a predominant rusher who ran for 1,000 or who absolutely pounded the ball out. It was a pass-oriented offense. They had three guys with over 90 catches, two more guys with over 50 catches. All right. Now, on that team, they had Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Donald Driver, and James Jones as their top four wide receivers. Well, look at what the Giants have. They got the big three, and then we're not sure who the number four is going to be. But Roger Lewis, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that's the point. Four star receivers who were all a big part of the passing attack. And in spite of that, JerMichael Finley that year caught 55 balls. Okay? Actually, I meant targets when I was giving those stats before. JerMichael Finley was targeted 92 times. 55 catches, 8 touchdowns, averaged 14 yards a catch. Which shows you there is room for a pass-receiving tight end in an offense that is jammed with talented wide receivers. You can make it happen. That year, okay, the Packers finished first in the league in points for, third in the league in offensive yards for, third in the league in passing yards, 27th in the league in rushing yards. They were a top-heavy, pass-oriented offense, and they did it with basically the same skill position groups that what the Giants have now. Because you know what? Red Ellison is actually Tom Crabtree, the blocking tight end. Crabtree was 6'5", 245 pounds. Ellison's about 260. But he's Crabtree. And Crabtree that year, if you recall, had, oh, wow, a total of only 6 catches.
Well, and Ellison only has 51 over the course
That's
of his career.
That's my point.
Anyway. Yeah.
The Giants have built an offense that mirrors the 2011 Green Bay Packers. The big mountain of a tight end who blocks and won't hardly touch the ball. The tight end who is a pseudo-wide receiver. Big-time weapons on the outside. A running game that's going to be supplementary and by committee. It's Packers 2011 all over again. And the net result, again, I want to remind you of this. Number one in the league in points scored. Number three in the league in overall offensive yardage. That's what the Giants have done. And it didn't really click until I started to study this. And I'm like, well, how are they going to use Ingram? What can they do with him? What's the personnel groupings? And then it hit me. Go back and look at McAdoo's past. 2011 Green Bay Packers. I think that's the blueprint for what the Giants are not doing just with the tight end, but what they're going to do with the entire offensive scheme.
Well, though Eli Manning, ever since he's teamed up with Ben McAdoo, they've looked to spread the wealth. I don't think that's a brand new concept.
No.
Regardless of whether or not they may have had the personnel that mimicked the 2011 Packers, if you look at the targets even from last season, they had multiple players that had over 70 targets. So that's been a principle of the Giants' offense even the last few years. It is interesting, though, the comparison when you look at Green Bay. And I remember when we were talking about the tight ends that the Giants may look at, and then look at what Ben McAdoo did with Green Bay tight ends. Green Bay relied on, similar to the Giants, undrafted late-round picks as well as young guys, and then looked to develop them. If you look at who came through the scheme in Green Bay, and JerMichael Finley became their mainstay before, obviously, he got banged up and had to deal with some injuries. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com for the remainder of the program. Lance Metal, Paul DeTito with you here. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're reviewing the draft class from 2017. We've obviously reviewed Evan Ingram, the first-round pick, Dalvin Tomlinson, the second-round pick. We're going to open up the phone lines as well at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get into more of the draft class, especially the late-rounders, as we move forward here on the program. Joe, though, is in Pennsylvania, and he gets us going on today's program. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Now, just following up on what you're talking, the 2011 Packers, I guess you wouldn't have no idea there, Paul, on short yardage there, 1 and 2 yards going for it or so, the Packers, what did they do? Did they pass the ball or run the ball?
Well, here's what I obviously I don't have those statistics, but what I can tell you is in that 2011 season, Jermichael Finley only lined up as an inline tight end on 7% of their plays. He was constantly in the slot or outside, and as a matter of fact, what they did to create, remember, he was not known necessarily. He was originally a three-point stance guy when he came out of college, but they loved his receiving skills so much, they made him, you know, a move tight end.
They molded him.
So what happened was, instead of having him block in line, okay, he became a moving blocker so that he would go in motion and he would be a stand-up blocker who, when he would come in motion, would get to the end of the line, set, and then take on a linebacker. He would not take on a defensive end because they knew that was a mismatch that he could not handle. I suspect the Giants feel the same way about Ingram. He's going to be probably, like I said, outside slot, move tight end, and he's going to be asked to take on guys with a step or two start and a straight-up two-point stance, which actually gives him a chance to take on a linebacker. It also says, look, at his size and his weight, he should be able to take on any safety or corner who wants to come on a blitz or who wants to try to guard him in press coverage. He should be able to muscle past him too. Just go back and look at Jermichael Finley. I'm telling you. That's what they've done.
That's what I'm looking at there, Paul. And I'm thinking, well, the Giants, well, we don't want to be a power runner when really we're a passing team with these mismatches, and
yep.
Especially like with the timing. I mean, you just our team just practices with our receivers and our tight ends, even going for like in the red zone or so, or two-point conversions. You know what I mean? It's really timing, and I'd like to figure out our percentages if they practice that. Just short yardage situations like that with our two big receivers, when you have the two big receivers and anybody else in there, you know what I mean, with these quick hooks this way and that, and a quick passing timing to Eli, their percentages might be up there in the 80%.
Well, seriously. You know, the other very popular play out of this skill set and positional group and philosophy is the wide receiver screen. That is a very, very popular play out of this type of personnel grouping. And the Giants now have the opportunity. Imagine throwing a wide receiver screen now to Beckham if he's lined up in a trips formation with Marshall and Ingram.
And they're both blocking ahead, yeah, up the field.
Think about that for a second.
Well,
or Shepard.
Correct. And you could also run screens to Marshall, too. I mean, I don't think that's
sure you
well.
Could, but yeah. Marshall's a very good blocking wide receiver. Yeah. And Ingram, you would think, as a, quote, receiver, he's going to have the size to be able to take on any defensive back. So if you run a screen to OBJ or to Shepard with those two other guys in a trips formation, what are they going to do to that?
Well, because you have size up the field blocking to create more through the layers of defense.
Look, here's my problem. I'm old school. I'm a power running guy first. It took me quite a few hours to digest this and accept it as, wow, it's a great idea. But the proof is in the pudding. It's where McAdoo's DNA is from. With Green Bay, it was incredibly successful. I can't argue with the results. So what? It's against the 80s New York Giants power style that I grew up chewing my Rice Krispies
right.
on.
Right, this ain't Parcell or
it's not.
No more.
I got to admit it. It's not those Giants anymore. Time to move into video game football in the new millennium, and now I get it.
But with that being said, though, the importance of and I think, Joe, you were alluding to this. Regardless of the offensive scheme and the desires out of the scheme, you still need to have some concept and be successful in short yardage situations and be able to run the football, even if you're not necessarily a power running team.
I understand, but the main thing is the pass is going to set up the run now, really and truly.
Yep,
with
you're
personnel.
Right.
That's That's the Bible saying there.
The Packers that year, by the way, were fifth in the NFL in first downs. And again, I don't have the breakdown of rushing or passing. Grant averaged 4.2 yards a carry. Starks averaged 4.3. So while they were a dominant pass team, the pass did set up the run to be what appears to be, based on the stats, they were somewhat effective and effective enough when they had to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. Scoring, and like I said, hopefully we can we up our scoring, because our defense was great last year, and if we can up our scoring into the 20s, you know what I mean? That's all I can say. We were in the teens and up into the 20s. That's what we need to do, and if everything goes like last year, so hopefully. So that was my main point there, too, that we're a pass-first team now, really and truly, what McAdoo wanted to do and with our personnel and in drafting. So thanks for taking my call. We'll
Hi,
see
Joe.
You guys.
Appreciate the phone call. I'm looking up the numbers further here, Paul. They were third in passing yards per game.
Yes, I mentioned that.
And then 27th in rushing, which I believe you also mentioned, just to look at where they finished statistically.
They scored 35 points a game that year.
Yeah. Well, that's
you
the
like
key.
That?
But see, that's the most important statistic. The most important statistic is the scoring, because you could be a great offense that moves the football, which the Giants mm-hmm. have done in the past, but then they've struggled to punch it in. So it's most important to know whether or not the success rate is there and punching it in. That's the key.
That year, the defense was 22.5 points a game. The Packers gave up in 2011, 19th in the league, and they wound up finishing with a 15-1 record, by the way.
Yeah, and then, well, that was the year they ultimately lost to the Giants then in the postseason.
What are you going to do?
Well, I don't think it's a negative. I mean, you're acting as if, like, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, my God.
I'm not crying any tears for
the trenches.
I'm not crying tears for those people in Green Bay.
Yeah.
They lost to the better team.
Oh, that's what you were – I thought you were alluding to the conceptions.
Oh, no.
That's why I didn't know where you were getting at
with. I think everything that I just talked about, about the blueprint, I think it's incredible how it holds water. But, you know, they ran up against a – Super Bowl championship giant team in the playoffs.
They did indeed. And, I mean, getting back to your analogy here, this is no surprise. When coaches come over and take over for a team, they always try to put their stamp on those teams.
Sure.
And it's no surprise that, once again, he's going back and digging into what he utilized in Green Bay and trying to apply it here with the Giants.
Do you remember when Ben McAdoo came to the Giants in 2014 as the offensive coordinator? Finley had come off with a neck injury.
Yeah, we had conversation after conversation.
And we all talked about
Correct.
The fact
he
that
hurt.
Finley himself said if he could clear a physical, he would like to come back, if not to Green Bay, to the Giants to be with Ben McAdoo. He was a very prominent member of rumors and conversations that whole training camp.
Yes.
That's why, you know, folks, we all missed the boat on this. Everybody in the New York metropolitan area missed the boat on this.
Well, but
that's where this team is headed.
But keep in mind, that season, that was the Larry Donnell breakout campaign.
As
and
it turned out to be.
And that was the season when I remember he had the 3-touchdown game against the Redskins.
Right.
And, you know, all offseason, the phone calls were about JerMichael Finley, who ultimately wound up retiring because of his neck injury.
Correct.
And then Donnell comes to life, and then all of a sudden the chatter quieted down because they did have that tight end who helped stretch the field and was able to punch it in. Unfortunately, Donnell had his own injury issues and so forth, and there were some blocking issues as well. So, you know, they've had flashes in that department. The problem is they're looking for that consistent weapon. Can Ingram be that? Time will tell. I think he's got the potential to do that.
Certainly has the speed to do it.
Indeed. Let's head back to the phone lines here, 201-939-4513. Mike is in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Mike. What do you got for us?
Good. I just had two questions. The first question is for either of you. Who on the running back committee right now would you consider the power back? Because they're all about the same size. They're all about 6 foot and approximately 210, with Gallman weighing the most at 215.
Well, and that's the problem. I don't see a true thumper in that backfield right
well,
now.
If you're looking for one, though, Mike, I mean, I would throw out, I think Orleans Darkwa is the guy that if you're in a goal line situation, you want to run north-south, Darkwa would be the guy that I'd have on the field.
Also, be careful, though, because Gallman has run for 30 touchdowns over the last two seasons at Clemson and has certainly shown a nose for the end zone.
Yeah, Goleman to me, though, is more of a mix. Goleman, we've
seen, I agree.
I mean, if you look at what he's done at Clemson, they've run him to the outside where he then can get out to open space, and he has run up the middle and up the gut. So, I mean, a little bit of both, I would say, in which they showcased him at Clemson.
Okay, cool. And the other question was about the defensive end redraft at Avery Moss.
Avery Moss,
yeah.
Yep.
Do you think he will be a first-year contributor as a rotational guy?
Well, let's put it this way. The way I see it, he's going to be competing with Kerry Wynn, Odighizuwa, in that backup role, you know, to figure out, okay, how many defensive ends you're going to keep and who's going to be in reserve. I mean, I think Okwara is the third defensive end right now in terms of pass rush. So that means there's room for there's room for probably two more. So if you're going to give Okwara a spot, that means Wynn, Odighizuwa, and Moss are going to fight for two spots.
And
that's what it says.
And I would throw another player in that conversation. I'm not saying that I classify him as a defensive end, but the way
Devon
they utilized
Kennard.
Devon Kennard at the end of last season, he also
team.
I'm not saying that his roster spot is up for grabs.
Okay.
I'm talking about if you're looking at Avery Moss being a first-year contributor, which is what Mike's question was, Kennard, to me, is going to also eat into that conversation because they also bring him down to the line in some passing down situations.
Well, then it becomes not only who's on the 53, but then who gets a jersey on Sunday.
Correct.
Making the team is one thing. Getting Sunday's jersey is another.
Well, and Mike, to even make it even further convoluted somewhat, you know, let's see what Avery Moss can do on special teams, because I think also going to dictate
whether or not
he can be a key contributor. That is what will dictate whether or not he's going to get the jersey on Sunday.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. Have a good day.
You got it,
sure.
Mike. Appreciate the phone call. And Moss is one of the other selections that we haven't necessarily talked about. He started at Nebraska, then he followed Pelini, who left from Nebraska to go to Youngstown State, and had 11 sacks in his most recent season.
Yep.
So he has a knack for getting to the quarterback. There's always going to be the question marks about transitioning from a lower-tier program to the NFL. But remember, you know, Kerry Wynn is one of those guys who
Richmond.
Was even undrafted. Richmond. And Kerry Wynn, you know, had some flashes here or there, too. So it goes back to the reason I bring that up, Paul, and the reason I keep bringing up Hankins and Linville Joseph is track record. You know, just like we talk about the Giants haven't drafted a linebacker in the first round since 84, well, Moss and Tomlinson, to me, fit into the narrative of what the Giants have done in previous drafts in terms of the style of the players they have taken and where they've taken those players. And those are things that you have to take into consideration when you evaluate a draft class or you're trying to project who they may ultimately take. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Bam Bam is on the line. Bam Bam, what's happening?
Gentlemen, how you guys doing today?
Hi.
Doing all right, Bam Bam. What do you got for us?
Well, first off, just great job covering the draft all weekend.
Thank you.
Particularly on Friday, you guys did I think it was Friday, you guys had the, from about 7 o'clock on, you guys, I was listening to you guys the whole way, so great job. I think when reviewing this draft class, we also have to kind of review the offseason as a whole and where the team has come from. And I think when you look specifically offensively, no offense to these guys, obviously we all know what Cruz has meant to the organization, and Rashad Jennings was a class act here, but the Giants have essentially taken Cruz, Jennings, and Ty off the field in replace of Marshall, Perkins, and now Ingram, and they've added a lot of speed to the overall offense here. A lot more guys that can make plays. It kind of seemed like unless Beckham was breaking the big play, everything else was underneath. My biggest concerns for the team, though, moving forward, is it doesn't seem like they added any depth to the defense. They kind of just treaded water there. And the offensive line, obviously, is the Achilles heel, or at least it has been. So just kind of want to hear your thoughts about not just only the draft and review, but where this team was when the season ended to where they are now. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Bam Bam. Appreciate the phone call. Well, with respect to depth on defense, I mean, one of the things we talked about, I remember when we did our mock draft on Thursday, was perhaps if the Giants would look to draft a corner to just provide a little bit more additional insurance in that department in the event that DRC is banged up and something to that degree. Now, you know, they did address that somewhat in free agency when, you know, they brought in Antoine Blake, who's now Valentino Blake, who is with Tennessee. So you do have somewhat of a veteran corner slash special teamer. That is someone that you have to take into consideration. As far as the defensive line, Avery Moss is an addition to that, but a young guy. We'll have to see how he pans out.
We just listed the choices there. There are enough guys that you could select from there. I think the big thing is linebacker. They didn't add, to this point, any linebacker help. And so I think you pretty much have what you have. I don't know anybody else is going to walk onto campus and help you out there.
Unless there's maybe an undrafted player. But, you know, Keenan Robinson re-signing him, though, was extremely critical. Let's not forget about that, because he was on the market talking to other teams. And then, if you remember, the JPP deal got done, and that created flexibility for Keenan to return. So while, yes, maybe he didn't bring in somebody to back him up, the fact that he's still in the mix is extremely critical. And then you look at the defensive tackle position. You lost Hankins, but now Tomlinson creates more competition with Bromley and Robert Thomas, which was one of the question marks we had entering camp. Mm-hmm. Would there be somebody else that would push those two as they fight to replace Hankins? So, I mean, to get back to Bam Bam's question, is there a drastic change in terms of personnel on defense? No. I think there's a few complementary young pieces that have been added. But remember, if you go from where that defense left off, that defense left off at a very high note.
Exactly.
Completely opposite to what we're talking about.
It wasn't a lot of upgrading to do.
Yeah, with respect to the offense, if you want to make the point, and he did, where you traded out Cruz, you traded out Jennings, you know, we'll see what happens with the tight end, and you upgraded a little bit more speed and size, that's one thing. But where you ended off on defense, you are a top 10 unit. So
top
the goal
five.
Is, the
easy
goal
top
is,
five.
Well, I mean, in terms of all the other statistical categories, on average, top 10, you want to now be able to stay there. That's the goal. To maintain that continuity.
And, you know, I would add one other thing, too. And you and I have talked about this before. Darian Thompson is virtually an extra draft pick this year because he was on IR last season.
Yeah.
So to everybody out there who says that the Giants wasted their third-round pick on Davis Webb. Because he's not going to play, in theory. Well, guess what? You got your third-round pick. Darian Thompson is your third-round pick because he's a rookie this year in every sense of the word, given that he spent a season on injured reserve last year. And I think even taking Thompson out of the equation, you got to tell me, last year's rookie class, even without him, was good. So that was a winning class. Don't even think about him as part of the 2016 class. Think of Darian Thompson as the third-round pick of 2017. Okay, because he's virtually a rookie. So plug him in there, and he becomes part of the 2017 draft. And Davis Webb is a guy like a mutual fund. You put the money in the bank in the mutual fund, you let the thing go high and low and high and low, and you don't touch it till you need it. Davis Webb, no problem. You're on the shelf. You're a future quarterback. Think of this year's third-round pick as Darian Thompson. And when you think of it that way, it makes a lot of sense.
Oh, I agree with you. You're right. We've had conversations. I keep referring to Darian Thompson as a redshirt because that's what it was. It was a redshirt year. He played two games. That's it. Only played two games. First 2 weeks of the season. And remember, he was in line to have a key role in gaining continuity with Landon Collins in training camp, but then he suffered the shoulder injury. And then all of a sudden you had the foot injury. So it was one thing that came after the other. He only wound up playing two games because he injured the foot against the Saints in week two. Tried to come back, re-aggravated it, was ultimately placed on IR.
Exactly.
So that was a redshirt year. He, I agree with you, is essentially a part of the 2017 draft class. And here's another thing. We didn't bring up the name B.J. Goodson, who got playing time here or there, but he's now a guy that could very well take the step forward this coming year, given some of the field work that he saw in 2016
Great point,
as
Lance.
Well.
So, in effect, there will be some supplemental additions to this defense this year, even though you didn't necessarily see it during the 3-day selection process.
The importance of getting that class outside of Thompson on the field last year could go a long way in terms of helping towards 2017, because now the guys on the back end of the draft, they've gotten enough taste of live football that when they get back on the field in 2017, it's not baptism by fire, which sometimes it is for late draft picks from the previous year. Let's head back to the phone line. Steve is in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Oh, what's happening, Lance? Peter, how you guys doing?
Hi. Hello, Steve. Long time no speak. How's everything?
No. Hey, man, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thanks. Listen, I want to make this quick because I know there's probably a ton of other callers. So I'm going to go right through, man. I'm going to wrap up in like less than 45 seconds.
What timing?
So what I want to do is I'm going to go ahead and kind of give you a couple side notes, what I think. I'm going to give you a grade on the draft and on the offseason as a whole, and then I have one question, and I promise to be quick. Okay, first of all, I'm glad you brought up some good points, Paul. It's great to see you're flexible and optimistic and open to new things and, you know, and your mature age of being a Giants fan as far as being okay with going, getting away from the, you know, the pounding ground and all this, what we call powder puff on the shakedown. But anyway,
Let me just say this to you.
I'm not so there, Paul.
I just want to say one thing to you. I was slow to adapt to the cell phone, too. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, listen. But one thing that really I thought was profound, Paul, is you brought up the fact that we got all these players that look like what Green Bay did. And that's my biggest problem. That's my biggest problem here. Because, number one, let's just, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mike McCarthy more respect for Aaron Rodgers. And I believe that was Aaron Rodgers' offense more than anything. I think the West Coast fits Aaron Rodgers a lot better than it fits my quarterback. I don't like the way they kind of did things and then not allow Eli to, you know, adjust as far as making things that were comfortable for him, you know, totally getting away from, you know, this, you know, little play action. I just really don't like the way everything happened. But anyhow, with all that said, I'm just not a McAdoo fan. Let me make that clear. I'm not sold on him. I don't believe in him. But I am a Giants fan, and I'm always going to be for life. So what I wanted to say is I love, you know, a couple great players. I thought we had a great offseason with the addition of Fluker and Marshall and the kid from Minnesota. But
when
I don't – and I also like the running back we brought in, the defensive tackle. They kind of grown on me. For the life of me, I don't know what they were thinking of getting Webb. I kind of, you know, with having Geno here and the kid they just signed, to me, I have no qualms telling you. I was a Deshaun Watson or bust the whole draft. It was, if he was there at 23, take him. But if not, it was no. I didn't really feel like we had to take a quarterback. I really didn't feel like we had to take a deep tight end in the first round either. But that's a whole nother point. So I'm just go ahead and say I thought the offseason as a whole at this point is probably a barely a B. It could have been an A plus, but this C minus draft just threw everything off, and really the whole Webb pick threw everything off for me. So all I want to say is after this window, I'm not happy about it. McAdoo, you got all these weapons. The more less weapons in 2015, we had a great offense. 2016, more weapons. It didn't seem like he knew what to do with more weapons. That's what concerns me, because we got one football, all these weapons with a coach. I'm not sure he can adapt his scheme to what other teams are doing. So anyway, how are we going to spend the money moving forward? Are we going to get a tackle, depth-wise, another linebacker? What are we going to do, guys? That's all I got. And thank you for letting me get that out.
Okay.
All right, Steve.
Take care.
Appreciate the phone call.
The problems with last year's offense, they got very little production out of the tight end. And unfortunately, despite the miraculous comeback by Victor Cruz, he was a shadow of himself. You know, he was a functional player, but not a top-flight player who could do all the great things that he had done before. And so when you take basically the limited production at tight end, the reduced production at Cruz's slot, and then the limited production out of the running game, what is the offensive coordinator or the offensive-minded coach supposed to do? Ben McAdoo did not have the kind of tools at his disposal last year to put forth a very potent offense the way it turned out. We thought maybe going in he would, but the way it turned out, the performance did not allow him to do the kinds of things they would like to have done. All I'm saying to you now is that the way this offense is currently constructed, he's got the 2011 Packers. So there should not be any reason not to put up those pinball kind of numbers.
Well, I think that you've got more size in terms of the offensive firepower
and speed
around the quarterback and speed
and depth at running back.
But the one thing,
and
I,
a better offensive line too. I think they're going to be better, and Fluker's going to be a great addition.
Well, there's competition, and that's what you need heading into training camp. You want guys to push one another. But the one
and
point,
the blocking tight end.
And the blocking tight end, correct.
Got one in for the first time in how many years?
The one thing, though, I do want to point out, you know, you mentioned about Victor Cruz maybe not being the same type of player, but I think it's also important to note Victor Cruz was targeted 72 times last season. When Victor Cruz was in the prime of his career and at the top of his game pre-injury, you're talking about he had 131 targets, 143 targets, 123 targets. So he had 50 more targets in the years where he was putting up, you know, monster numbers. And of those 72 targets, by the way, he had 39 receptions. And if you go back to last season, each of his 39 receptions were critical catches that led to either first down conversions. So the reason why Victor Cruz's production was down, and I understand Marshall's more size and more versatility. I'm not making that point.
Ability to get open a lot quicker, too.
That did contribute, I think, to his lower numbers. But the point is that to say that we were expecting Victor Cruz to put up what he did in 11 and 12 is ridiculous, because I don't think anybody necessarily anticipated that was going to happen. But it is also important to take into note that, once again, when you have 50 to 55 less targets as a wide receiver, your numbers are going to dip.
Yeah, but there's a lot of reasons for why the targets were less.
In terms of the separation, I think that did play a role.
Some of it was on him. Some of it was on the game plan.
Absolutely.
Some of it was on the lack of pass protection, to having to get the ball out quick. A lot of factors involved there. But I think if you look at the offense now, they've upgraded that wide receiver position. They've got a blocking tight end for the first time in years. Now they have an incredibly potent receiving tight end, which they certainly did not have last year. And they've enhanced the depth in the backfield, and they believe they've got an improved offensive line. About the only thing that stayed the same is Eli Manning. Everything else has been upgraded. So I expect there to be a lot more points and a lot more yards. Again, it won't be old school 1980s. I get it. I'm now moving on from that. I can't hold on to that anymore. I wanted to make this team into that format. I can't do it.
But let's also not forget that when Perkins became more of the number one back at the tail end of last season, the production did improve on the ground.
Yes.
So I would be very curious to see, when you utilize Perkins in a bigger sample size, does perhaps just the simple change in personnel help create more opportunities and more production on the ground?
It's going to.
Well, that is something that we're going to have to monitor. We're going to have to see, because it's one thing to see Perkins for about four or five straight games at the end of last season. It's another thing to say, okay, now if you spread Perkins out over the course of 16, mm-hmm. will that production be spread out accordingly? That's, to me, a bigger question to see.
Although, I'll tell you what, I'd have no problems with the Giants bringing in a power back still to add to this mixture. And, you know, if there are certain veterans still out there, and you know who you are up in that northeast part of the country, if that can work out and you can add the power back to this equation, I would not be adverse to that, because there's still going to be short yardage situations where you're going to need to get that yard. You're going to be inside the two-yard line. You're going to need to pound it out. You're going to need to have some kind of ground game going in the final 4 minutes of a game. I'm still not going to totally move off of that. I'd still like there to be some semblance of a power run game on occasion. They're not going to be primarily doing that anymore. That's gone. The time has passed. The calendar is flipped. I get it. If I can get a little bit of it, I'd be real happy.
Well, I mean, I think every team, even pass-happy teams, need, as I mentioned earlier in the program when you were making the comparisons to the Packers, I said you still need to be able to run the football mm-hmm. on short yardage situations wherever you are on the field as well as near the goal line. You have to have some semblance of that, regardless of whether or not your identity is through the air. Let's head back to the lines. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
See, y'all must have knew that I was going to come on here to wild out on y'all. For listen, P. Dot, and I'm glad y'all said that right before y'all threw me on, that you see what they doing, and you see the direction that the Giants are going into, but you still want some resemblance of a power game.
Gotta have a little bit. Gotta have a taste of it.
And this is my whole notion of it. And my boy Steve just called up here, and he said it because I was going to say it myself. This is powder puff football. This is the powder puff football that I called in when I started calling. I said we are heading into, and it's going to be a disaster. It's a mistake. You don't win with the powder puff. This, at the end of the day, this is football. You have to be physical. Physical to win in this game. All that 2011 Green Bay, that's a flash in the pan. That happens once in a blue moon. When you want to win in this league, you must be physical.
Shakes, it's video game football now. That's what it's become. It really has, and you and I both know it. And I try to resist it forever, and I can't do it anymore because it's taken over the game.
You say that, but at the end of the day, who still wins? Like,
well, the teams that have balance. You're right.
Dallas Cowboys don't pass like that. They run the ball.
That's fair.
Teams like that that still run the ball is still dominant in this league.
Yeah, but Shakes, they had the Giants.
The league is going to a pass heavy offense type of league, and you're right on that to a degree. But when you look deep into it, to win in this league, you have to be physical. Seattle, why are they still always in the championship rounds or in the playoffs? Because they're physical. Why is New England still there? Because they're physical.
You're gonna preach to the guy who's my nickname is Mr. Trenches. You're gonna preach to me?
That's why I'm mad at you, P-Dot. That's why I'm mad, because you're sitting here trying to justify what we're going into.
No.
In this league.
No, Shakes. Here's the problem. I see the way the league has morphed. I see what the Giants have now tried to do. They've set up a blueprint to do this kind of ball, to adapt to the new league. I get it. I understand it. I personally don't like it. Here's the way I'm going to explain it to you, Shakes. It's like cough medicine, okay? It doesn't taste good. I don't like it. But I know that when I'm sick, I got to take it, because that's the only thing that's going to make it better. And video game football is like cough medicine to me. But I don't know that I have a choice.
I know we don't have a choice, because that's what the Giants are doing. But to me, I do not like it. And I feel like it's a mistake. And 2-3 years down the line, when McAdoo is gone, we're going to be sitting there going, we need to get back to the physical football. We need to get back to the physical football. I guarantee it two, three years down the line. This is what we're going to be saying. And this is a total mistake. I do not like any of the draft picks that we had besides Wayne Gallman. Wayne Gallman is the only draft pick that I like.
Shakes, you know
the
what, though?
Only one.
For the last 4.5 years or whatever it is, and I've been crying for that style of football, you know how much grief I've caught on this show? Nobody wanted to listen to me. Nobody wanted to deal with it. Nobody wanted to hear about old school. I got called every name in the book. And now you're going to tell me you want me to go back to my roots? you don't want me to adapt to the new wave?
That's why I'm mad at you, man. I'm mad at you, because we usually share the same mind frame. But here's the thing. When I say we need to have physical football, don't mean that I want to be totally inept into the passing game. We should be able to do both.
Correct. You want to have balance, Shakes.
And that's how you win in this league.
Well, Shakes, I don't disagree with you. Balance is important. And to piggyback off of your point, I'm looking at the numbers from last season. And this is the top 10 teams last season in terms of rushing yards per game. Buffalo was number one. And then when you look at where Buffalo finished in terms of points per game, they were also top 10 in points per game. Cowboys were number 2 in rushing yards per game. They were number 5 in points per game. Tennessee was number 3 in rushing. Tennessee finished 14th in points per game. Atlanta was 5th, which ultimately went to the Super Bowl in rushing yards per game. They were the number 1 scoring offense. The Raiders were 6th. The Patriots were 7 in rushing yards. The Raiders were 7th in scoring offense. The Patriots were 3rd. So there is a correlation between teams that are in the top 10 in rushing yards per game and then that turning into points.
Of course there was, because power football is great.
Well, that's
why.
But it's not so much power football. I'm not saying that you have to be a power football team and you got
to
run up the gun and run teams over. You need balance. You need balance, and you need to have the threat to run the football.
Absolutely.
That's
Shakes,
what you
Shakes, here's, the, here's what I will say. Yeah. Here's what I will say, and this is the part that's keeping me sane from pulling out the rest of my hair, okay? They brought in a 350-pound mammoth named DJ Fluker, who is absolutely going to help some semblance of power football. Trust me on this. He is a moose, and he is going to destroy people. They brought in a 260-pound tight end, finally a blocking tight end. he will help give the Giants some sense of power football. And if that veteran running back from the Boston area comes in, I think you and I are both going to be happy.
We got to use Allison like Bear Pascal. We have to use him in an H-back. We got to use him like a fullback. We just got to bring the fullback back into this system and this Giants offense.
Remember, if you want to, you know, I mean, this may appease to Paul, not necessarily the entire audience, but if you want to go with that Packers analogy, John Kuhn flourished while McAdoo was an assistant coach. So they had used a fullback in that offense. I would not be surprised if Ellison is tight end slash fullback and they move him around. I don't think that's a stretch based on what Green Bay has done and also based on how the Giants have utilized previous tight ends.
I agree. I think that's what they need to do. But the second-round pick, and this is my last point, the second-round pick had two ACL injuries. This is the second-round pick. I mean, what did we do in this draft, fellas?
Well, but here's the thing.
What did we do?
He did have a pair of ACL injuries. One, by the way, was in high school, okay? And the other one was his first year, okay? And then since the ACL injury, he has been fine. So, I mean, that's something
you also need
to take into consideration.
Three seasons
removed from his most recent ACL.
Shakes, did you hear the interview we did with him the other night on the show?
No, I did not. Mm-mm.
Go back. I'm pretty sure it's – Dave, is it archived?
If the whole show isn't archived,
did we pull out the Tomlinson interview on Friday? Did we post that on the Giants.com site yet? If not, here's what I want to tell you, Shakes, and I want to tell everybody out there. If you were too busy watching the TV for the draft or had other things to do – we talked to Ingram was on the show on Friday night. We had Tomlinson on the show Friday night. We had Webb on the show Saturday, and we had Gallman on the show Saturday. So I invite you guys to go back into the archive. I hope they're all up there, and you can listen to those interviews. They're great. They're long. They're extensive. They're detailed. You get a lot more information about these guys than anywhere else. We also talked to tight ends coach Harris from Ole Miss, who was the Ingram's tight ends coach. We had that on Friday night. He gave all kinds of detailed information about Ingram. There's stuff on there, guys. Just get a listen. It'll be worth your time.
Okay, I'll do that, man. And thank y'all for taking my call, man.
You got it, Shakes. Appreciate the phone call, Snacks. Not Shakes, excuse me. Snacks. I got Harrison on my mind.
Dave, did they all go up?
Well, they may be able to grab that clip.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously once that's up, we'll let you know in terms of Giants.com. But I want to go back to, you know, what Shakes questioned. 2012 was a redshirt year for Tomlinson. Then 2013, which was his first year at Alabama, he played one game. He played in the opener, and he wound up tearing his ACL. And then he had torn his ACL as a soccer/wrestler in high school. So 2013, he plays one game. He misses that entire season. He returns for 2014. He's a rotational defensive lineman. He plays 14 games. 2015, 15 games, another full season. Rotational defensive lineman. Then 16, once Alabama actually lost some guys because they were stacked, he starts all 15 games, and he held up. So 14 games in 14, 15 and 15, 15 and 16. That's what I think is important to note. Three full seasons removed from his most recent ACL tear, which happened in 2013, which was his redshirt freshman year. So that's the breakdown for Tomlinson. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Steve is in Atlanta. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Well, Steve. What do you got?
Yeah, so I'm here in SEC country, and every Saturday you have no choice but to watch Alabama play. And I'll tell you, every time I watched them play, I couldn't get my eyes off of 54. He was all over the place. I mean, it was like the guy was just, I mean, he was incredible. I mean, I think he's going to be a special player. I don't know about the injuries, but I tell you, he dominated the play. Now, they all dominated the defense, but that guy, I saw him throw offensive linemen to the ground. I mean, I think he's going to be very good. But my question is, you know, there's a lot of cornerbacks taken, and I thought we might grab a cornerback somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
But there are going to be a lot on the street, I think, because there's about a bunch of them that were drafted. Do you think we're going to pick up a cornerback?
Well, I think the first thing you got to figure out is where the new fella stands. I'm forgetting his name again.
Dante Dion, you're talking about?
No, Valentine.
Oh, Valentino Blake.
Valentino Blake.
Yeah, Valentino
you
gotta, Blake.
I mean, yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't remember watching him much when he was in the NFL in his first few years.
Well, he was a main person in that Steelers defense.
I know what his role was, but I haven't watched tape on him. So I don't know exactly how much of an upgrade he is. I do believe that Dante Dion can be a backup slot corner. I believe that. Now, he can't. His physical limitations will not permit him to be successful in this league on the outside. I understand that.
Which we saw in the preseason, by
correct.
The way, in that Buffalo game.
Correct.
Go back. Yeah.
But an effective slot corner as a backup, I think he can make it.
Yeah. Valentino Blake, just to provide more background, his biggest impact was his special teams. Because he
yes.
was a guy that was utilized, and that's what happens when you're the fourth corner
but
or something
I
like that.
I need to get a hold of more tape on him in a defense.
Well, when he was in Pittsburgh, though, because of injuries, he was a guy that started consistently. He wasn't a guy that they just brought in off the street. He was a consistent starter, and he had a few interceptions over the course of his career. But in recent history, his biggest impact has come on special teams.
I wouldn't mind seeing another corner emerge during training camp, though, and make the team, whoever that turns out to be. For all I know, it could wind up being some guy they bring in the next couple of weeks to rookie minicamp.
Well, remember, Andrew Adams made the team at the safety position, so it would not
happen.
Surprise me. Correct. They may bring in a corner to answer your question, Steve. They could bring in some undrafted corners to provide more competition in training camp. I don't think that's a stretch at all. You know who the top three are. Blake, I think, is going to have an opportunity to try to solidify a role as maybe the fourth or the fifth corner. Dante Dion, who we brought up, is somebody who flashed last preseason and last year during training camp. But there is room to certainly add some more personnel. No doubt about that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Sure.
I really enjoy watching the show.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much
show.
For tuning in. Appreciate that, Steve. Thanks for the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Just to provide an update, so the Engram, the Goldman, and the Webb interviews are up on Giants.com, and Tomlinson will hopefully be posted in a little bit. They're trying to track down that segment.
Excellent.
Just to give you an update.
Excellent.
So anybody who missed the live program, you can at least peruse those interviews. They're up in the archives on Giants.com. The other thing that I wanted to mention, I tweeted out about 2 days ago after they had drafted Biznavati. Jeff and I did a spot with the Pittsburgh beat reporter, and that was on April 13th. So if you want to go back and listen to that, he gave a pretty nice breakdown of the Pittsburgh offensive line because they had three prospects, if memory serves me correct, entering the draft. So that, I tweeted out the link. It's maybe one of my last tweets in the last 2 days. And I could not find – I don't know if you remember. I believe you and John may have done – did you do an Ole Miss spot? Because I wasn't on that show. Was trying to track down. Somebody asked me on Twitter, and I apologize for not responding because I'm still looking through the archives myself. I believe you guys did an Ole Miss spot.
I think we did.
Didn't you?
I think we did.
When we track that down, I will tweet it out or we'll let you know on Big Blue Kickoff Live because somebody did ask me when we had an Ole Miss writer on to sort of go back and listen to that.
I thought we had one of their radio announcers on.
Radio announcer? Okay. I'm going to try to track down the date, and then as soon as we know that, because this is we did so many spots, but I think it's nice to go back and listen.
Well,
now that we have draft picks to talk about.
You know, I think his tight ends coach, when we had him on Friday, was just sensational. We practically know everything a guy had for lunch. I mean, he was so detailed on Engram. Awesome information. And the one thing that he said was he thinks he's going to be a better pro and more productive pro than he was in college because he felt, much like Coach Saban talked about O.J. Howard, and said that, you know, we didn't use him all the different ways he could have been used because we had to worry about our own deal.
Yeah.
Well, I think his name was Coach Harris, said it in regards to Engram, we know we could have used him out wide much more than he did, especially on the slant route over the middle, because it would have been unstoppable. But you know what? We just did not have the need to do it. And he said, but I'm sure that they'll look at that when he gets up to the NFL, and he's going to be even more dynamic when he gets there.
Well, part of the reason why Engram exploded last season, which was his senior year because he decided to return at Ole Miss, was Laquon Treadwell, if you remember, was the number one wideout at Ole Miss coming into last year's draft. The Vikings took him in the first round, didn't play much because he was still learning the playbook. So with Treadwell out of the equation, Engram became the legitimate number one target for Chad Kelly, the quarterback who's Jim Kelly's nephew, who was taken with the last overall pick to go to the Denver Broncos. So that's a big reason why his numbers skyrocketed. It's understandable. You get more targets, you become more prolific in the offense. But he was still a key piece of the offense, even in previous years, Paul.
Yes.
And I think that that is a little bit more interesting to go back and look. And the reason I bring that up is because, Paul, he's now entering an offense where, you know, as we've been talking about all show, you have three other legitimate wide receivers. You have some young running backs that may be involved in the passing game. I think it's more interesting to see how Engram produces when he's surrounded by a wealth of talent as opposed to what Engram does when he is the legitimate number one guy. And he's not the number one guy coming in to the Giants. He's going to be contributing also probably on special teams as well, as Ben McAdoo mentioned. So those numbers that he put up and how he was utilized in his earlier days in Ole Miss, I think are a little bit more relevant to maybe how he can fit in year number one with the Giants. Before we wrap up shop, let's just peruse on Twitter because we're getting a lot of tweets in with respect to the draft picks and so forth. So I just want to take a look at what everybody is chiming in on. Vic at NFL NYG43, if Rhett Ellison only blocks and never catches the ball, why would we just not use the 340-pound tackle instead? He's questioning that. But here's the thing. The tight end can be an additional tackle on the offensive line. Let's not forget about that.
And he's can also block on the move as an H-back. I mean, if you're going to tell me that, you know, let's just say, and I'm not going to say this because I think Fluker's going to win a job, but the loser of the offensive line battle, the sixth offensive lineman, he's not going to have the agility or the versatility or flexibility to do the things that Ellison should probably be able to do.
To get up the field a little bit quicker, to get to the second and the third layer of the defense.
Oh, I got to tell you, man, I got to think that when you guys see Fluker, I had a chance to sit and talk with him the other day, okay, and we had a really good conversation. He was over at the draft party signing autographs. He is just, I mean, he is a mountain of a man. I almost felt like I was the matador and he was a bull when he was walking toward me. That is not the look that you want to have, because you see him coming towards you and you're thinking, I'm a pancake. That's it. I'm about to become a pancake.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of players that have gotten in the line and path of DJ Fluker during his Chargers days, I think can relate somewhat to what you're hinting at. There's no doubt about that. Let's take a look at a few more tweets here. We were talking earlier about how the rushing yardage per game equates to perhaps how many points per game you put up. So Ben at Gruen Ben says the Titans and the Bills, who I brought up, were actually in that top 15 range in terms of points per game. Were terrific running teams that couldn't make the playoffs. You have to have the pass as well. Well, you want balance. There's no doubt about that. But even though the Titans and Bills were not great in the air, the fact that they ran the football, they milked the clock, they were still able to punch it in and score points because they were both in the top 15 in scoring. So that should not be overlooked. They did have their shortcomings in the passing game, but with Marcus Mariota and some of the weapons they brought in, I guarantee you're going to see an improved passing game,
by the way,
with Tennessee.
Bottom line, four-minute offense. I've said this before. You're up 21-17. Your offense has got to be able to use some type of power running game to win that game. You cannot constantly give the ball back to the other guy and tell your defense they've got to hold with a minute and a half to go and seal that game up for you. You cannot do that every week, which is why you got to have some semblance of a power running game. Something. I don't care what video game offense you're playing. You got to have some of it.
Ben brings up a good point on Twitter with the influx of cornerbacks, the teams in the draft. Cornerbacks may be released at some point. Every action has reaction, meaning that this was such a star-studded class that now you're going to infuse youth on a variety of teams. Maybe they'll let go of a veteran or something like that. Remember, Leon Hall, who was a late addition, was a valuable asset to the 2016 Giants. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be a Leon Hall out on the market, but the impact of this draft class is now going to probably force somebody to maybe lose a job who is up there in terms of a veteran. So that, I think, is a very fair point as well. I don't know if you see any other tweets. I think we hit on the majority of the key points. We'll try to reach out to anybody else who we didn't address off the air. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running. We'll have reaction to the draft all week long. We'll try to have some more guests on as well to react, some position coaches, hopefully, who were at the colleges where these players played. And we'll take your phone calls as well. So a lot to look forward to with respect to the upcoming week. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.